Off the Ball Daily.
A home for your favourite podcasts from Off the Ball.
A friend once said to me, you don't drive a Ferrari in a mucky field, and Keane McPhillips would certainly not be running the National Cross. He is a Ferrari.
Subscribe to the Off the Ball Daily podcast feed right now.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With UPMC Orthopaedic Care. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.
This is News Talk.
Good evening, you're welcome along to Tuesday night's Off the Ball. We're on your radio until 10 o'clock this evening. Coming up tonight, we're going to be speaking to Paul Hugh O'Sullivan, the TD, from 7:30. So the FAI are meeting a joint directors committee tomorrow afternoon to talk about safeguarding in their sport. And Paul Hugh O'Sullivan is going to be part of that committee. So we'll speak to him about when they were informed that the FAI were going to show up tomorrow, and we'll get a couple of the details that we're just a little bit unclear about at the moment as well. John Fallon of the Irish Examiner is going to join us before 8 o'clock as well to give us a bigger picture look at what's on the line tomorrow. Kay Ryder and Patricia Timmins, meanwhile, are going to join us in studio from 8 o'clock. They are Dublin Camogie players from the 1960s when Dublin secured a 10 in a row of All-Ireland titles. If you broaden out those parameters, they won 18 out of 19 All-Irelands. Possibly the most dominant team in any era of any Gaelic game sport that we've seen. However, their stories aren't overly well told. There's very little archive footage of them online, and their stories, as I say, haven't been heard in too many places. So really looking forward to listening to the two of them in studio from 8 o'clock. Then after 9 o'clock, the football show is coming your way. Graeme Hunter will be amongst our voices before 10 o'clock. He'll be speaking to us about the Ballon d'Or, Lamine Yamal getting overlooked in favour of Ousmane Dembele, and we'll also pick his brains on Pep Guardiola and how he's approached football in the beginning of this new season. Our number is 0879 180 180 if you want to drop us a WhatsApp message. Cameron Hill has got your news round. Evening, Cameron.
Evening, Owen.
And Michael McCarthy is in studio as well. Evening, Mick.
Hello, welcome back home.
Thank you very much. Cameron, your top story tonight is obviously to do with Patrick Horgan. This is big booming news. You want to just deliver the retirement news for people who haven't heard it yet?
Yeah, brace yourself there, Cork fans. Cork star forward Patrick Horgan has announced his retirement from intercounty hurling this evening. The Glen Rovers clubman posted on Instagram to confirm the decision, describing his time with the Rebels as the greatest privilege of my life. The 37-year-old won his fourth Munster title with Cork in the season just gone, as well as a National League, and lined out in this year's All-Ireland final defeat to Tipperary.
Not a surprise, but it's still a...
I'm surprised.
Well, he is 37.
Yeah, exactly. But that's it's almost, I was just saying that, like, you know, God, you have to think, like, he'll be 38 in the middle of next year's championship. And yet I'm surprised. It just goes to show you that you kind of, some people you just think are going to be around forever. And I think Patrick Horgan fits that bill almost as much as anybody. And, you know, I thought he had a pretty good year this year as well, you know. So was there a sense of, I wonder if Pat Ryan had stayed on, would Hoggy have stayed on? Because, you know, you don't have to go through the whole new manager process, new style of play, new team, etc. And you just kind of like fit into the old way of things. So not a surprise, but maybe you're right on that. But I think an anvil nonetheless for Cork fans. Like, to put it in perspective how long Patrick Horgan has been there, you know, one of our colleagues outside in the office there, Hannah, who's from Cork, is, you know, borderline inconsolable here. Patrick Horgan has been playing for Cork for her whole conscious life.
I forgot to say.
So I think from when she's been 3 years old. And she's working with us here. Like,
the only, you know, the only reasonable response from the hurling community to this is that TJ Reid needs to retire now as well. Call it quits.
Call it, like the high jumpers.
Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
When they decided to share the gold medal.
That's right, yeah.
I'm just Googling here. He hasn't, I haven't missed
No,
TJ.
I don't think so, no. TJ will turn 38 now in like next month or in November, I think. So he's even got 6 months on him. So
he's got a free hit at taking the all-time scoring record, and he'll never be caught now, TJ. Patrick holds it right now, as far as I'm aware. Because obviously, like, they would have gone a bit longer into this year's championship, so I presume by dint of that he's managed to get his nose in front. But one more year will put TJ back in there until the next generationally great scorer comes along. So what do you do? Do you bow out now and just say, listen, Patrick, fair play to you?
Yeah. You wonder if there was a kind of if they were holding each other up for a couple of years. Who knows? But like the question with, first of all, it's like three now gone of the famous class of 2008, which, you know, there's a lot of features on and sometimes you can be reaching. But I think there was a time when TJ Reid, Patrick Horgan, Joe Canning and Seamus Callanan were the four best forwards in hurling. And it was a significant period of time. Like, it was a few years, which is kind of amazing that they all came through at the same time. But, like, you know, only one remain, at least for now. We've been thinking about this, and you say it glibly, and then you think about it. And since I've been thinking about it, I'm less sure, but I haven't been knocked off the idea that Patrick Horgan is the best hurler to never win in All-Ireland for a tier one county, at least, that you know, for someone that would have a chance to win in All-Ireland.
Yeah, my initial reaction to that is John Milan, and yeah, I'd say a lot of people would have Horgan on a pedestal above Milan, but he's definitely my reflex.
They'd be close, and John Milan wins, you know, five All-Stars playing for Waterford, and there's plenty of Waterford hurlers there as well, but nobody has ever done what he has done for Cork and not won All-Ireland. That's a fact. You can argue about best hurler in a wider sense never to win, and I'd be interested to see what people think or what you guys think on that. But in terms of playing for Cork since 2008 to finish in an All-Ireland final in 2025, 6 points up at half-time and ended up getting hammered, first of all, how do you come back from that? And secondly, is like, how nobody has played for Cork for that long in their history. They've never gone so long without winning an All-Ireland. Nobody has played for them for so long without picking up an All-Ireland. It's a remarkable thing. And it's been far from his fault, because he has been there, and no matter who they've brought through, the young team, one of the most exciting teams in Ireland, at least twice now. And never has like Hoggy's place been in doubt, you know. I think you watched him this year. You know that it wasn't a graceful thing for not being able to kind of, you know, put him out to pasture or anything like that. Like, he was very much deserving of his place in that team.
It's amazing that that's going to be the first thing that everybody thinks when they hear this news. Maybe not Cork fans, because they'll think of maybe the joy that somebody like Patrick Horgan brought to them. But for the other 31 counties, everyone's going to think, geez, he never got his All-Ireland medal. Or like, they'll think, is he the best player to have never won an All-Ireland? Yeah. Having not won an All-Ireland is going to be front and centre for most people when they think about him, which is the brutal reality of what happened in his career.
That and the county he's from.
And I would say he is between two eras of Cork winning an All-Ireland, unless what happened in the second half of this year's All-Ireland is so psychologically damaging that they actually will not win another All-Ireland for another decade. I can see them winning one in the next few years, and his career will be bookended by All-Ireland.
If they win it next year, I think it's hard to take. I'm sure he'll be fine. Yeah, Kieran Whelan basically played between Dublin
96
All-Ireland
to 2009.
Well. Yeah. Yeah.
Ouch.
That's unreal.
If they don't win next year, what do Cork fans blame? Because that seemed to be the refrain from that. It's like, well, you know, Horgan's just not got it anymore. We need to get rid of him. Whereas if they don't this year,
I don't think that's... I don't think they were. I know what you mean.
I know, there's a certain cohort. I'm not saying all Cork fans by any means.
Post-match, but I think fairly respected. And again, I think if you just coldly look at the before, I can understand the idea, and there's been plenty of conversations in Kilkenny about whether... Actually, for both of them, funnily enough, there was a sort of a sense of like, are the team better without them? Are you carrying a player for their freeze and for their presence and leadership? And I think both of them had their best year in open play for a couple of years this year.
Okay.
You know, to almost sort of like push that back a little bit. You know, TJ went in full forward and became a menace. But like Horgan, in terms of like, you know, obviously, I'm a Clare fan, and you're watching them in the Munster Championship every year, and God only knows how many battles they've had and Munster finals and, you know, two different All-Ireland finals he's come across. Bill Simmons always talks about how he would judge a New York Yankee, say, as a Boston Red Sox fan, of how scared he was of them, how much he hated them coming up to the plate. Oh, no, here we go, this guy, home run. Hoggy was that hurler. It was like, he's true and go, oh, this is a goal. Like, you know, and he was just ruthless. And you think of, it's funny, we're talking about him being a, you know, one of the things on his hurling obituary is that he never won in All-Ireland. You think of like possibly his greatest ever performance is on a losing team, and one of the best performances on a losing team ever, when he scored 3-10 in the All-Ireland quarter-final against Kilkenny.
Yeah, 2019.
And was on the losing team, you know, like, so he's had these unbelievable performances in his career, and it's there's a part of me that wants to say, and it's unfair and it's silly, but I feel like Cork let him down.
That's,
you know,
that's
and there's a part of that, that he's too good a player from too big and too good a county to have not had more help over the years and not had more people to help him get over the line. And he played until he was 37 years of age, and that those around him never got him over the line.
Well, I think that is a far more reasonable thing to say than Patrick Horgan let Cork down. I if you're going to pick one of those two things, the infrastructure around him maybe is the one. Also, his career starts probably around the peak of Kilkenny's powers, and the end game comes close to the peak of Limerick's powers. So it's really in those, in that interregnum between those two teams where maybe a lot of the regrets will lie. 2025 may be a bit of an outlier in this, given Limerick had been knocked off by Dublin this year. But it's in between those 2 years where there were all Irelands available for various counties, and Tipperary obviously picked up a couple. Galway managed to get off the mark. And obviously Clare getting there in 2013 as well. And of course,
he'll carry with him. The last two All-Ireland finals. Yeah. And I know what you mean about that in-between period. There was a time in 2017, 2018, they won back-to-back Munsters, and there was a real feeling that Cork were back in a really big way. And I always think the 2018 semi-final against Limerick was such an important pivotal moment for the future of the sport, almost, because it felt like whoever won that game, and I remember it went to extra time.
2018.
And it was like, 2018, and it was like basically night time in Croke Park, you know, for an All-Ireland semi-final. It was kind of this amazing, and the Nicky Quaid save when he came out and all that was like, you don't...
No, it's amazing how your memory of that is completely different to mine.
Okay.
As in, like, I can just still see the blistering sunshine at the end of extra time in Croke Park that day.
Right, and I'm thinking of it as night time. Okay. Well, it was about 7 o'clock in the evening, wasn't it? Maybe my memory is playing tricks on me with its sort of poetic license. I'm thinking of it as a movie almost.
It's sunsetting on Patrick Horgan's career, you could say.
But there was, 70,000 people in Croker that day and all. It was just this amazing occasion. And Limerick squeaked over the line, and Cork didn't really recover from it. And Limerick went from strength to strength and won, six of the next seven All-Irelands.
And look, Cork did beat them last year, you know, and they may not have been the ones to end their campaign this year, but they beat them in a Munster final. So even when I say that his career is bookended by Kilkenny and Limerick, that's actually not true. The last 2 years of his career, he beat Limerick.
Yeah.
So look, that's maybe not entirely accurate. It'll be a fascinating one to unpick over the next couple of days as well.
But one of the best, that's, I think, there's not 100 hurlers we'd sit here if they retired for tonight and just talk about in this way for the first 10 minutes of the show. I think he is, without a doubt, I think there's arguments, we can get into them and they're fun over who's the best to do this or who's the best to do that, or, you know, did Cork let him down, did he let Cork down and all this. I think we can all just agree he was one of the best hurlers that we've seen.
For sure. The news round is with UPMC Sports Surgery Clinic. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action. Cameron, where do you want to take us next?
Well, we've EFL Cup action tonight, Owen, which you'll be delighted to hear. Liverpool manager Arne Slot says he'll field a completely changed lineup for tonight's round 3 clash with Southampton, and so it has proved. 11 changes to the Liverpool team tonight, including a first start for Alexander Isak in the competition, as well as teenager Rio Ngamuha coming in for the side as well, while Georgi Mamardashvili gets the nod in goals, taking up the role of Carabao Cup goalkeeper from erstwhile keeper Kevin Kelleher. And the reigning Premier League champions have only conceded 5 goals in the league so far. They've all come in the second half, however, and Arne Slot was asked questions around his side's game management after half time.
No, I think we manage the game really well, but we don't manage some moments really well. So this was also the thing I said before the game. There's a lot to like, but we have to understand that a moment can change momentum. And this is what happened against Bournemouth, where we're 2-0 up, was our game, but a silly trick. We conceded 2-1. The set pieces against Newcastle, conceding just before halftime against Atletico Madrid, when we played so well also in the first half. So we have to understand that maybe we have to understand that that a moment can change the game. No matter how well you play, no matter what you do, always fight for those moments, and this is where we can improve a little bit. But we managed the game in general really well. I don't think they had any chance after they scored the 2-1, but it always feels a bit difficult if you're only 2-1 up.
Elsewhere this evening, Chelsea travel to Lincoln. League 2 club Cambridge United are the visitors to Fulham. There's an all Premier League tie between Wolves and Everton at Molyneux.
Yeah, 3 Irish players in that Everton starting lineup: Mark Travers, Jacob Ryan and Seamus Coleman, all starting at Molyneux this evening as well. So Ireland FC. Coleman and O'Brien
together. Is that never the twain shall meet?
I mean, the golden rule, which I quite often forget, is that when you're live at 7 p.m, do not trust the formation that Live Score give you, and certainly do not read it out on the radio.
Well, however, they got two right backs there.
however, on Live Score, they've pushed Seamus Coleman into holding midfield tonight. So maybe this is a strange new development in the closing chapter of Seamus Coleman's career.
My guess would be Jake O'Brien is in centre back.
Yeah.
If they're playing a back three, Seamus would be on the right-hand side of it.
And Jake O'Brien is wing-back.
Possibly, yeah.
One of the other, probably one of the right, because it'll have to be straight to back with Keane and Tarkowski in the starting
team. Oh, yeah, okay.
But then they've got Carlos Alcaraz in there as well. So who knows?
I'd like to see Coleman in midfield and an extra year to his career.
And see what David Moyes does for the Republic of Ireland.
Trent couldn't do it, but you know Seamus could.
What is next, Cameron?
Well, Arsenal will be without Noni Madueke for the next 6 to 8 weeks. The 23-year-old picked up a knee injury during Sunday's 1-1 draw with Manchester City in the Premier League. Reports suggest that it is not believed that Madueke has suffered an ACL injury, however, but he's going to be out for a minimum of 6 weeks.
Yeah, we'll be discussing a bit more around Arsenal on the football show after 9 o'clock.
Munster have today confirmed that Tadhg Byrne will remain as captain for the upcoming season. The 33-year-old forward took the armband from legendary back rower Peter O'Mahony ahead of last season. New head coach Clayton McMillan has opted to keep the Kildare man in the role, calling him a world-class player whose level of performance never drops. The province get their URC campaign underway this Saturday with a trip to the Scarlets. Now, McMillan takes the reign after a tumultuous season for the men in red last time out, with former head coach Graham Rowntree leaving the province last October. In his new autobiography, ex-scrum half Conor Murray voiced his frustration among a range of topics around the high turnover in coaches over the last decade. But hooker Niall Scannell was asked about it this week and points out that there have been many different reasons for the coaches departing.
We've certainly had, a lot. I've been here since Rob Penny was here. So I've certainly had a lot of head coaches, but it's hard to be frustrated really, because when you kind of look at the circumstances of a lot of them leaving, Rob went to Japan. Obviously Axel passed away, and then when Razzie came in, he also left. Johan had extended his contract and then went to Bath, and we obviously had a mutual agreement with Graham last year, and now we've got Clayton. So just don't really think it's not like soccer player manager stuff where we're chopping and changing the whole time at a whim. I think that's just kind of how the circumstances have played out. There's been a variety of reasons that we've changed coaches, so it's kind of hard to be frustrated, but I just think, I don't think that'll be anyway in like Clayton's psyche or anything. Like he's here now and he's trying to implement his own style of game. We're just looking forward to seeing how far we can take that.
Maybe this is a little bit like getting excited for Ruben Amorim coming to Manchester United. But are we feeling that Clayton McMillan could actually be the guy?
I think you put the way you framed that makes me nervous to say yes. Makes me feel like I'd be a fool alone. I remember the night he was appointed. I was at something. Yeah. I was at a gig or something like that, and I came out and you guys were talking about it on the radio, and I was like, oh, what's this? And you got someone on from New Zealand to chat about it, and I got very excited that night.
We had Brad Weber on the scrum half.
And I was driving home from whatever it was at and kind of got very excited. And then I think maybe reality of Munster's situation has dawned a little bit more since then. And you're thinking there isn't necessarily a magic wand coach that can come on, but you would hope that they will get more out of things and that some of the players will start to develop. There is a cohort of young players at Munster that you feel like are due a step up, and you kind of feel like it has to happen this season. But it's badly needed. There's a staleness there that. Let's see. But I'd certainly hope so.
The season starts this weekend.
Which is a slap in the face in itself.
Yeah,
the interminable wait became one of those things that you never thought was going to end, and then suddenly it hits you.
And this is where they have to, set out their stall and ensure that if they have one of their friends from South Africa in a knockout game this year, they actually have them in Thomond Park as opposed to down in South Africa.
For the last two seasons in particular, is it three seasons even, where we're here sitting here talking in sort of November, December, talking about it's very realistic that Munster aren't going to be in Europe next year. And they always rally, but God, they put themselves in this awful position.
Yeah. It's the seat of your pants stuff last year. They needed bonus point wins against Ulster and Benetton to get over the line and get into six. So, you know, it is tricky. I mean, this weekend could be the last game they ever play against the Scarlets with the way that the Welsh regions are going at the moment. But, yeah, you'd have to feel that, like, getting a running start here and seeing what this McMillan side is all about will either encourage or maybe keep the worries going from Munster's perspective.
Yeah, we're going to be talking plenty around the Ryder Cup as well this week, obviously. We're going to be previewing tomorrow with Chip Beck on the line, and Nathan and I are going to do a bit of a history since Medina as well, because there's been plenty of drama. But you've got the latest from the States today, Cameron.
Yes, Shane Lowry says Europe have the chance to do something amazing at this week's Ryder Cup. Luke Donald's team are hoping to win the trophy on American soil for the first time since the miracle of Medina in 2012. Europe have won 8 of the last 11 events, and Offaly man Lowry was part of the victorious team in Rome 2 years ago. He was also at Whistling Straits in 2021, paired with Rory McIlroy when they were beaten by Tony Finau and Harris English in the Friday four-ball. But Larry feels they weren't totally to blame for Europe's comprehensive defeat to the US 4 years ago.
You know, if you look at our team going into that, you know, a lot of guys were not playing well. A lot of guys were kind of coming towards the end. And I feel like we then moved on to Rome, and it was almost like a changing of the guard a little bit, where, you know, our bigger players, our younger players became like the more experienced players, like, you know, the Rorys and the Rambos and even Victor. And I feel like those guys could come in and lead us in Rome. And I feel like they're going to do that again this year. You know, obviously, I think a lot of the guys are playing well. I think we have a great team. It's going to be very, very difficult, but I think we've got a great opportunity to do something amazing. For me, that's so exciting as a golfer. Like, this is what I do. This is the reason I wake up in the morning. So there's, honestly, I love competing at the highest level. I love playing the majors, but like, this is actually the reason I wake up in the mornings, and this is what I want to do. And, you know, people might not agree with me to be like that, and they might, you know, might get some criticism for saying something like that, but that's just me.
Elsewhere today then, Dervla Brady came fifth in the final of the 200 metres medley SM6 at the World Para Swimming Championships in Singapore. She's back in the pool on Thursday for the 50 metres freestyle S6 final. Nathan Timoney and Ross Corrigan have qualified for the A final in the men's pair at the World Rowing Championships in Shanghai. They finished third in their semi-final in the early hours of this morning. Jake McCarthy also through to the semi-finals of the lightweight men's singles, while Siobhan McCrone is also through in the women's event. And daily capacity at the Cheltenham Festival next year has been reduced to 66,000 people. That's 2,500 fewer than in 2025. Advanced ticket prices are being kept at the level set 12 months ago.
Cameron Hill, thank you very much for that. Mick, thank you. You'll be back with us after 9 o'clock for the football show. Podrick.